Today is Thursday, the April 19th, the year 2001. I am Jeff Charnley, interviewing Mr. Don Stevens, former member of the Michigan State University Board of Trustees. We're at his home in Lansing, Michigan, and this interview is part of MSU Sesquicentennial Oral History Project, commemorating the 150th anniversary of the university to be celebrated in the year 2005. Mr. Stevens, you can see we've got a tape recorder here today for this session. Do you give us permission to tape record this interview?
Yes, I do.
I'd like to start first with some personal and educational background. Where were you born and raised, and where did you go to school?
I was born in, the post office is Greenville, Michigan, but it was a farm about halfway between Belding and Greenville, west of the road, 4 or 5 miles.
What year were you born?
1914. November 6, 1914.
Mm-hmm. Did you go to rural school?
I went to a one-room rural school for 8 years, mm-hmm. in Grattan Township. And there was a one-room school. We had one teacher for 8 grades. And the teacher would set up front, and she would call the first grade reading and so forth, mm-hmm. up front, and it worked that way. And there was about usually around 30 up or down in the whole school. So some classes only had one or two, and some would have three, four, something like that.
It's interesting you mentioned Grattan Township, because my Chapin ancestors came from upstate New York, and they settled right there by Slayton Lake.
Uh-huh. I know Slayton Lake
in Grattan Township. Uh-huh. My ancestors lived in Section 13.
I see.
Not far from the Grant Cemetery.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know where that is.
Well, yeah, I was going past it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So some of my relatives are buried right there. So I know Grattan Township.
Yeah.
Did you go on to high school then after?
There were four of us children. My oldest brother Frank and my sister he was about 5 years older than I am, and she was about four, but they started high school together in Greenville. And they graduated in 1928. And I started that fall at high school. I'd finished the eighth grade out there in Grattan Township. At the end of the eighth grade, when you go on to high school, all of the over at the Township Hall over in Grattan Center, you had to go over there and take a test, and people would come from the different districts and so forth, and take the test for a day. And I never heard anything about it, but what happened with the test. But anyway, we went on to high school after that, fall of 1928.
Mm-hmm. And you went to Greenville?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What did you do after school?
Well, I drove. Usually we had Model A Ford, Model T Ford, mm-hmm. In those days. And in the fall and in the spring, I would drive. But during the cold winter months, I would stay with my grandmother. She lived, my father's mother, Grandmother Stevens. She lived in Greenville, and just about a block from the school. And I stayed with her until the roads got passable, because in those days they didn't have equipment to clear the roads like they do now. Mm-hmm. And it just wasn't practical, because there would be many days you'd never get to school if you had to drive 8 miles through the snow.
Mm-hmm. Spend all your time getting there. What did you do after high school?
Well, after high school, my mother had died in 1933. And that was a year after I graduated from high school. And, of course, that was right in the midst of the Great Depression. And I, of course, wanted to go on to college, but I didn't, because there was just no money. The banks were going belly up, and I'll never forget driving into Belding, because as I say, we were about halfway between Greenville and Belding, and my parents had some business at the bank there in Belding. I drove my mother into the bank, and I remember her going to the door, you know, and then turning and come back with a sad look on her face, whether there'd been a notice up there the bank had been closed. Mm-hmm. So that was all over the country they were starting to close. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until it just kept on. And until after the 1932 election, after Roosevelt was elected, he closed all the banks in the United States. And then the guaranteed, the deposit guarantee, what there's a name for it, right? Mm-hmm. Was established, he recommended, and it was established by Congress. And fortunately, it's something that has worked through the years.
Did your grandmother ever get any of her money?
Well, that was my mother.
Oh, your mother. Okay.
I don't think she was money. I think mm-hmm. she was in there to pay off on the mortgage.
Uh-huh.
You see, the farm people were losing their farms right all around us, right and left.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the farms in that area were, well, most of them had a small dairy, herd of dairy cattle. Mm-hmm. And then they had diversified farms. They would grow potatoes and beans and corn, and then they would wheat. And a lot of the grain that they would grow would be to feed the cattle. Times were really hard. And so I just never was able to go on to college.
Did you work on the farm after school?
I worked on the farm. I worked on the farm for about a year or so. And my father went to live with my grandmother Stevens. They moved to a little house that they got. It was about halfway between Belding and Greenville. It was at the top of a hill as you drive toward Greenville, and as I said, my father lived with my grandmother, and she had sold, or she had a big house in Greenville, and she had been able to keep it, but this is an issue that was a sad thing in all of our lives. Mm-hmm. When my father was about 16 years old, and this, of course, was the turn of the last century.
Mm-hmm.
It was discovered that he had cancer in his leg bones. And the cancer went way up to his hip. And finally, they had to put him on a train, you know, all the time, because there was no surgeons in that area that mm-hmm. could handle it, and send him to Chicago. And so he had to go back into Chicago for all of the medical work and all the doctors, the surgery and everything else. And fortunately, it apparently got all of the cancer.
Mm-hmm.
But then,
I sit here too?
What's that?
Could I sit here too?
Yeah, you can sit here.
Okay, I'll listen to it. Mm-hmm. I heard part of it at one time, but I like to listen to it.
Sit down.
Okay, thank you.
They got all of the cancer. And but it, in those days, of course, they didn't have insurance like they have nowadays.
Right.
And my grandmother Stevens, her husband, my grandfather, Egbert Stevens, and his father, George Stevens, George Washington Stevens, had a hardware store in Greenville. And the medical expenses of to help my father get well, to get through the operation and all that, and the travels into Chicago and everything else, was so much that they had to sell the hardware. And then not too long after that, my grandfather died. And my grandmother, of course, was alone, and she didn't have a lot, but she had a big house on South Lafayette Street. And she used to she'd have teachers come down from the high school, which, as I said before, was only about a block away up a little hill. And she would, they'd come down for lunch. There'd probably be about 15 of them around the table every weekday. Sometimes those that stayed over some weekends. And well, she kept that going all through the years that I was in high school. As I said, I stayed there during the winter time when I couldn't. The roads were so bad, you know, with the snow and everything, that you couldn't get in. And the roads weren't even, well, they were gravel, but there were no black tops or anything. So in the fall and the spring, you had huge, big ruts,
muds,
you know, mud you'd drive through. And soon after I finished high school, she was unable to keep her house going anymore. So she sold it, and my father and my brother, oldest brother, my oldest brother Frank, had got married, and he was operating the farm. We was able to keep our farm, where many around us was losing their farms. Mm-hmm. And they got this, I think they must have rented, I don't think they bought it, a house, we called it the Fox Farm. As a matter of fact, once it was a fox farm. They had these little dens, and there were no foxes there, but that's where somebody was trying to make money and make a living, you know, raising foxes. Mm-hmm. And I lived there with them for a while, and I worked around in different farms for about a year or so. And then my dad and my grandmother moved to Grand Rapids. So I went to Grand Rapids too. My dad worked in, he had worked in several different places. He worked, but mostly in a combination small neighborhood grocery store and meat market. And I got a job in a grocery store and meat market. And I worked in one store for about Stellard's Market for a couple of years, and then I went over to another market, the White Front Market, Samrack's Market, Harry Samrack. We knew the Samracks because they used to come around to farms and buy cattle and so forth and take them in to and butcher them, but they'd buy them from the farmers, then they would take them in. And they ran the farm, and so I say they ran the store. And I got along well with the Samracks. They liked me, and I liked them. And I had a friend that was working at Grand Rapids Creamery, delivering milk. And his name is Steckity, Cap Steckity. And I don't know what I was making in those days, you know, wages were so low. But he was making about $40 a week, and that sounded good to me. And so he said, why don't you apply for a job over at the creamery? Wait a minute, I'm skipping something. First, I worked for, after I left the grocery stores, I worked for a laundry. I worked for the American Laundry for 4 years. And I had a milk route. Or not a milk route, a laundry route. I'd pick up laundry and bring it back to the laundry to have it washed, and then I would deliver it back to them. And it was partly residential, and partly I'd go down to the offices downtown and so forth. And as I say, I worked there for 4 years, and that's how I got acquainted with Steckity. He talked me into going over to the creamery to apply for a job, and I did, and I started working there in 1941. I went to the laundry in 37, so that was 4 years, and I went to the creamery in 1941. And I continued there, and I had a milk route out what we called Homemakers. On the west side of Grand Rapids, and I had that milk route for about 4 years, and then we got it to 1944, just before the 1944 election. And Michigan, while I was at the creamery, we organized a union.
Tell about the time that you married me.
Well, yeah.
That comes in there sometime, huh?
No,
well, we haven't got there. Well, I have to go back, but I'll bring up a bit more. I want to finish this now. Let's see, what were I talking about?
You were organizing there. You talked about the organization, union organization.
Yeah, the union organization at the creamery. And the president of the state, at that time it was the CIO council. It was before the merger of the AFL and the CIO. And the president was John Gibson, a fellow by the name of John Gibson, who later became Secretary of Labor. He asked me to go to work for him in the 1944 election, and I did. Well, then I'll deviate here and tell a little bit about when I was working for the laundry. We used to go down to the Regent Roof Garden. They had dances down there at Regent Theater on the roof. You get on the elevator and go up in the roof. And what would happen, the guys usually would go alone and the girls would come alone. And one time, one Saturday night, I was there with, where we had our farms were right next to some Swiss families, Wittenbach, their name was. And I used to go down there with Leo and Walter Wittenbach. And one Friday night I met, I danced with a girl, you know, and you know, just had a woman, and there's two sisters. There's her sister Claire and her sister Gertrude. And Gertrude was a tall girl, and you couldn't miss her in the crowd, you know, she had blonde hair, you know. So I danced with Claire, and a couple of times, I suppose. And, you know, didn't think much about it. And the next week we went down there, and Gertrude was a little taller than the other girls, you know, than her sisters. And so I thought it was the same, the girl who was with her was the same girl. I started dancing with my wife's name was Wanda. She kind of abbreviated that later, after about 20 years, she became Wendy.
I don't even know, care that you. Why did you put the Wanda in?
You just listen.
So you started dating her sister.
Yeah. So, well, anyway, I started dancing with her, and I started talking with her. I said, I saw you. It was nice to see you again. I saw you last week. She said, I wasn't here last week. We looked a little bit alike. But anyway, so we ended up, we drove her home. And, we started going together. And we went together, let's see, that was, I think, in 36, just January about. And that was a tough winter, I remember, because we used to go out. There was the Wittenbachs I mentioned before, there was another Wittenbach family that lived over by Lowell. We used to go out there in the wintertime, and boy, and as I say, the roads were terrible, you know. But,
and they're hilly down there, too.
Yeah, and there was, in those days, they didn't grade them out very much. You'd go down the road, and if it was too bad, if the stress was too bad, what they would do is open the fence, you know, and you'd drive out through the farmer's field so you could get back on the road, you know. And that, so the way you had to get by. Mm-hmm. And
what year were you married?
In 1937. Mm-hmm. See, we met in early in 36, mm-hmm. And we were married in 1937.
And so you both had a house in Grand Rapids then?
Well, yeah. I lived with my father, mm-hmm. And as I said, I was doing these odd jobs and so forth. And when John Gibson came up, that's how I happened to get started in the labor movement.
Okay.
He came in, and I went to, so in 1944, I guess, that election, I just worked for him a little while, just through the election. And then after a couple more years, I went back and to the milk route, you know, peddling milk. And director of the union there in Michigan, and that, see, when they first organized, they called it the United Dairy Workers. Mm-hmm. And it was not an international union. It was what you call a local industrial union, and affiliated directly with then the CIO. And Roy Scoggins was the president of that dairy, a local 83 in Detroit, And they organized locals around Michigan. We had one in Grand Rapids, one in Flint, you know, and all over. And ours was 386. And it remained 386 for a few years. Finally, it merged with an international union. They figured they needed that it'd be better if they were affiliated with some international union. And we finally ended up in the retail wholesale department store union. And so we were in 386 of the RWDSU, as they called it, retail wholesale department store union. That included people who worked in, well, in New York and Macy's, you know, and the big stores around the country. Let's see.
Did you ultimately work for AFL-CIO? How'd that come about?
Roy Scoggins, they'd organized these unions, local industrial unions around Grand Rapids, and they organized a creamery in Sheridan, Michigan. And he called me one day and wanted to know if I wanted to go to Sheridan with him, a meeting of that local union up there. So I'm up there, and on the way home, he asked me if I would like to go to work for the union, for the international union, the retail wholesale department store union. And I thought, because I was interested in union, I was interested when they organized the union, and then it was all pretty informal. The dairy workers weren't considered interstate commerce, so they weren't covered by the labor laws that were in effect at that time. So we had a little strike, just a little slowdown there at the creamery. And the way we voted, they decided we'd have a vote, you know. And so they took the milk caps, you know, and you'd vote yes or no, you know, the union, yes or no. Mm-hmm. And I remember it voted yes on all. Just one person would never know who it was, of course. There was one vote no. Mm-hmm. So that's how we got started in the union. And I was president of the local union, which included several dairies around Grand Rapids. First, I was chief steward of the Grand Rapids Creamery Union. And there was another fellow by the name of Lyle Cameron was the president. And we continued for that pace for a while, and that's when, as I said, Roy Scoggins asked me if I would like to go to work for the International Union, and I did. But then, just like a lot of other things, especially when they're democratic, you know, you have factions. You have, we'd call them right wingers and left wingers and that sort of thing. But anyway, so it was a cut and dried faction, and it ended up that Cameron and I were on opposite sides of the fence. So we fought it out. But he went on to work for the International Union, and he got himself into some trouble. He finally got pretty well booted out. But anyway, during that fight, his group tried to kick me out of the union, they had a meeting, you know, and Roy Scoggins came in. I'll never forget, you know, he came in, and I'm quite sure I might have been saved anyway, but he come up, and it was all over, and it ended up no charges worthy of trial, you know, that sort of thing. So it kind of put me in a little bit of the driver's seat there for a while. And I continued working there. As I said, I worked until Roy Scoggins came up. And we got elected. Oh, and it's funny how we had an election for the state CIO convention. And So our local was small local. We only had about 90 members, I guess. In the Grand Rapids Cream. We had a local at Grand Rapids, and you have another local at Joppy's Dairy, and another local at Kroger Creamy. And I organized most of those locals. The first one was at Grand Rapids Creamy, and let's see. I'm trying to think. What was I talking about?
You're talking about the state CRO convention.
Oh yeah. So we had a delegate. We were eligible for a delegate to the state CRO convention, and so I ran. Whether somebody asked me to run or I just decided to run myself, I don't know. But anyway, I was elected out of the 90-odd workers there by just one vote. So I went to the state CIO convention, and...
You remember what year that was?
Let's see. Yeah, that was in... that was about 44, I think. Yeah, 44, that was the year I was elected. They had a president, a secretary, treasurer, and then they called them, they had 17 vice chairman. And vice president, you know, they called them. But later they changed that to just board members. But anyway, when I was elected, they called them vice presidents. So when we got to the convention, it was decided that there should be a that the Grand Rapids area and the Muskegon area through there should have at least one person on that 17-member list of vice presidents. And there was some support for two or three people come along, and they had an election, and I won that one by one vote. by just one vote. And I went on to that convention, and I continued to deliver milk until I think 46. That's when Roy Scoggins asked me to go to work for the International Union. And I continued there. We had, as we organized, we had some very exciting strikes there in Grand Rapids. One of them was at the Joppy Dairy. We had all the dairies organized there except Joppy's Dairy. And when you're organizing, we went out one morning, you know, and we talked to the guys and so forth, and they sounded interested in knowing. But anyway, we kind of hung on to their horses. They used horses until Pete Joppy, the owner of the place, he was Dutch, you know, Pete Joppy. And he had a fellow working for him that was a sales manager named Gus. I don't know his last name. His name is Gus, but anyway, Pete would call him Yus. Yus. Yus and George, he would say. We'd end up doing that. But anyway, finally we ended up organizing at Joppy's Dairy, so we had all the dairies there in Grand Rapids. Mm-hmm. And that's about the time that I went to work for the International Union, which included the retail, wholesale, department store union. And I worked there. During that time, it was later, 57 is when I was elected to the board. That continued on for several years, about with nothing too exciting happening. But in 1957, at the state convention of the AFL-CIO, which had just merged then. See, the national AFL-CIO and the state and the national CIO had merged in 55. But all the states didn't get the merger completed. It was about 1957 when they got it completed. And as I said, I went to that convention and I was elected as a delegate. And I continued working for the Roy Scoggins for, let's see, 57. Oh, the other thing that came along at the Democratic Convention that year. See, the board members to the universities are elected at the conventions. Well, they're not at the convention, they're nominated at the conventions. Mm-hmm. And at that time, see, as I said, the National AFL-CIO and the AFL-CIO merged in 55, but it wasn't quite completed in 1957. They were just getting ready to complete it here. And that year, the AFL had picked a fellow by the name of George Dean to run on the State Board of Education. That day, in those days, there were three members of the State Board of Education. They were elected at large. I think one every 2 years or something like that. They picked George Dean to run. And so at our convention, there was a movement on that if the AFL was going to have a candidate on the ticket. See, that was the spring tickets. In those days, the spring elections elected several of the officers. And that all changed later. All right, I can come to that. But so at the convention of the CIO, which was still called the CIO, in 1957, the CIO people wanted a candidate too on the ticket. And it maneuvered around, you know, and, oh, there's another fellow by the name of Bill Glenn.